This is Farms Food Future, a podcast that's good for you, good for the planet, and good for farmers. Brought to you by the International Fund for Agricultural Development. I'm Brian Thompson.
And co-presenting this edition, I'm Rosa Gonzalez.
You might be wondering, why is regenerative farming suddenly so trendy among farmers and environmentalists alike? Well, the reason, they say, is that we have a win-win. Farmers get healthier soils, better crops, and more resilience against climate change, while the planet benefits from carbon capture and improved biodiversity.
It's all about working with nature to rejuvenate the land and farming for tomorrow. So by embracing practices like crop rotation and ditching pesticides, we're not just farming smarter, we're also tackling climate change one field at a time. And today, renowned regenerative farmer Gabe Brown tells us all about it.
We'll also explore how these practices are shaping our food systems with André Loy, International Director of Regeneration International. And we speak to Rebecca Burgess, founder and director of FibreShed, on how they're revolutionising sustainable fashion and fibre production.
Find out more on regenerative organic agriculture with Jeff Tack, CEO of Rodale Institute. Lastly, EFAD's Associate Vice President Donal Brown gives us the scoop on what EFAD is doing in this realm. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our stories and who do you want us to be talking to? So please get in touch with us at podcast@efad.org.
You can also subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform. And please don't forget to rate us. Coming up, time to speak regenerative agriculture. You're listening to episode 58 of Farms Food Future with me, Brian Thompson, and Rosa Gonzalez. Gabe Brown is a renowned regenerative farmer and advocate, known for his pioneering work in soil health. He runs Brown's Ranch in North Dakota, teaches at the Soil Health Academy about the importance of a healthy ecosystem, and authored Dirt to Soil: One Family's Journey into Regenerative Agriculture.
Hello, Gabe. So tell us, what's the journey to becoming a regenerative farmer been like?
So it's been a real journey for me, 30 plus years of learning as to how ecosystems function. Back in the 1980s, my wife and I moved onto her parents' farm, and I learned how to farm from my in-laws. And they were very conventional farmers with tillage and monocultures and use of synthetics. Now, my wife and I had the opportunity to buy part of the farm from them in 1991. And it was shortly thereafter that I switched to no-till. We sold all of our tillage equipment and went 100% no-till. Then what happened to me was a series of natural disasters. So essentially, we lost four crops in a row to hail and drought. We were very deep in debt. So how could we continue to farm and ranch without using all of these expensive inputs? Okay, I can't borrow money to buy fertilizer. What am I going to do? Well, we'll plant some legumes. They'll, you know, through rhizobia, fix nitrogen and supply some of the nitrogen for subsequent crops. And we just started to notice a real change, though. Think of what it was occurring over time. We had 3 years of hail laying down all that biomass on the soil surface. Well, that's one of the principles of soil health now, is armor on the soil surface. I was starting to diversify the crop rotation, planting many different crop types. I was starting to plant cover crops. Back then, they were not near as popular as they are today, but I noticed a real change. I noticed I was starting to build soil aggregates. All of a sudden, we had earthworms in our cropland fields. We were infiltrating more water. So it wasn't like Gabe Brown woke up one day and said, I'm going to switch to regenerative agriculture. Nobody was calling it regenerative agriculture back then. That didn't come till 20 years later.
Which techniques would you say stand out for enhancing soil health and sustainability?
You know, nature itself is always self-organizing, self-regulating, self-healing. We need to understand that if we see what many people refer to as weeds, they're nature's healers. They're trying to tell you something. You did something wrong, and that's the reason they showed up. If we have a pest, that pest is more of an indication of something out of balance. Are we providing the home and habitat for the predators, insects that would take care of that pest insect? And then once we observe, then we change our management. We adapt accordingly to allow nature to heal.
Transitioning to regenerative practices can be challenging. Could you share some obstacles you faced and how you overcame them?
Very good question. So the major obstacle is simply a lack of understanding. Farmers and ranchers today, they cannot implement what they do not know. We need to educate ourselves. How does the energy cycle work? Photosynthesis, plants collecting sunlight. Are you collecting as much sunlight as possible? Or are you what I refer to as leaking sunlight? In other words, it's not being intercepted. That ray of sunlight is not being intercepted by the leaf of a living plant, and it's hitting the soil. On our ranch, we haven't spent any money since 2007 on any type of fertility. Why? Because there's no need to. We're collecting as much solar energy as we can, and that's what feeds plants, the microorganisms, feeds the animals, hence creates wealth, and we feed people. You have to be intentional. You have to make sure you have the soil covered with armor at all times. You have to make sure you have living plants as long as possible throughout the year to collect solar energy. You have to have diversity, not monocultures. You have to have those living roots in the soil as long as possible throughout the year. And you have to provide the home and habitat for insects and pollinators. It's the natural processes and the understanding of them that really create wealth.
And what are some of the positive outcomes you've seen on your farm, and what do you envision for the future of regenerative agriculture?
So I often get asked the question, can regenerative agriculture feed the world? And I use my own farm as an example. On a neighboring farm, my neighbors, they grow wheat. But that's all they do on that acre. Well, I will grow wheat, and then I will seed a cover crop, and then our grass-finished beef, our grass-finished lamb, all of our laying hens, our hogs will come in and consume that cover crop. So I grew the same wheat crop as my neighbor, but now I'm producing beef and lamb and pork and eggs and honey and all these other products off of that same acre. And I'm doing it without the use of chemical inputs. I'm going to feed the world much, much quicker than my neighbors will. And I'm going to feed them nutrient-dense food. So that's what I see as the future for regenerative agriculture. It is advance our ecosystems while producing nutrient-dense food.
Thank you, Gabe. You can visit brownsranch.us to learn more about Gabe's work. Next up, we hear from André Loy from Regeneration International.
You're listening to Farms Food Future with me, Brian Thompson, and Rosa Gonzalez. As a former organic farmer living on a tropical fruit farm in Australia, André saw the need to change agriculture as it's practiced today for the health of the soil, people and animals.
Regeneration International has been striving to achieve this every day with its 500 plus partners across the world by empowering farmers as agents of change. André spoke to our reporter Kira Rainsby about the origins of regenerative agriculture and its innovative practices.
A lot of them, actually, the origins come out of the organic farming movement and the agroecology movements. The basis of all farming, the soil. And how do you increase soil organic matter? In other words, how you can build fertility in terms of water retention and capture so that you've got better resilience to the disruption of climate that we're seeing. The longer you grow plants, the more organic matter you make. And when you grow plants, they take out carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, combine it with water, you use solar energy. That's called photosynthesis. They create glucose, which is the basic molecule of life. And from there, glucose makes oils, fats, carbohydrates, actually make cellulose, which wood comes from. The soil microbiome is the biggest area of biodiversity. And what they do then is they start to make the minerals that are locked up in the soil available to their host plants and feed it. And so ploughing our plants, the correct management of plants will actually increase soil fertility and save them money. And what has been really good in this space is that pretty well all the innovation has come from farmers.
So how does Regeneration International assist small-scale farmers in particular, and what benefits does it offer, especially to farmers in developing countries?
Right from the beginning, we brought them to the meeting. We've been working and educating, so we do workshops for small farmers. We run training courses, we're developing resources, and we're actually putting a whole new program together where we can start paying them for ecosystem services. So in Mexico, for instance, we are working with small-scale coffee growers in Oaxaca. That's an area that's been heavily eroded and degraded, so we're working with them on how we can regenerate these forests, get the benefits of conserving soil, putting in ground covers instead of having bare soil, and getting increases in yield through shade-grown coffee, but also now marketing that and getting them the extra benefits in price. And working landscape-scale, community level, not just at one isolated farm. It's systems like this that we regenerate the ecosystem and we increase the production.
So you live on your own organic tropical fruit farm in Australia. So to conclude, could you tell us how you've been applying regenerative farming principles on the farm and the benefits that you've seen from it?
It's the same principle again, the basic one. What we want to do is maximise photosynthesis. And so on our farm, well, it's trees are perennial, but underneath, instead of having bare ground sprayed out, we bring in functional biodiversity. In the orchard itself, I have about 30 other species that are growing, and these provide a whole range of ecosystem services. So, for instance, I have a lot of flowering plants that are host plants for the beneficial species. These are the natural enemies of the pests. So I don't have to spray even organic sprays. And I have other ones that will shade the soil, the living mulch. We get very hot and dry it out. Underneath the living mulch, it stays nice and cool. And all of these actually using the sunlight that my fruit trees aren't using, it goes onto the ground. Instead of wasting it, I'm now maximizing the solar energy that falls on the farm to provide ecosystem services. For instance, I've built up my organic matter from less than 1% to an average of 6%. And what that means, now at 6%, I'm just under a megalitre. So when it rains in the rainy season, I capture that. When you go into the dry season, I still have all that water. I don't need to irrigate anymore. That's what the magic of photosynthesis is. It's the ultimate solar energy collector. We collect all that sunlight instead of wasting it on bare ground.
Thank you, Andre. Find out more on regenerationinternational.org. And check out episodes 56 and 57, where inspiring rural youth share how they're fighting climate change with traditional knowledge and spreading awareness on social media. Now, let's shake up the textile industry with Rebecca Burgess, founder and director of Fibershed.
You're listening to episode 58 of Farms Food Future with me, Rosa Gonzalez, and Brian Thompson. Fibershed is a California-based organization that develops locally sourced and sustainable fiber systems and textiles. Their journey began with growers and artisans exploring carbon movement between the atmosphere, soil, and plants.
Through initiatives like adding compost to rangelands, they've seen significant CO2 drawdowns, highlighting the vital role of soil health in combating climate change. Rebecca Burgess is the founder and director of Fibershed. Our reporter, Kira Rainsby, asked her about their pioneering initiatives and the importance of changing the way we think about sustainable fashion.
Fibershed as an organization was not yet formed. We were a network primarily of growers and artisans and small manufacturers. There was a group of scientists and ranchers working on a project to understand the movement of carbon dioxide molecules between the atmosphere, the biosphere, and the pedosphere. These are three carbon pools on planet Earth of five. And those three carbon pools were being studied for their interchange of carbon based on rainfall pattern, temperature, land cover type. What the scientists determined was that adding a half inch layer of compost onto the rangeland system basically catalyzed a 2,000 metric ton drawdown of CO2e per year. And it helped grasses grow more. It helped move what they call more liquid carbon. You can imagine we have 63 million hectares of rangeland in California. If you just increase the grain season, you've got a 2,000 additional metric ton drawdown. So the carbon in below our feet is actually, there's a carbon debt there. So we need to recarbonize our soils and we need to decarbonize our atmosphere.
So can you highlight some pioneering initiatives that Fibershed has been involved in and the impact as well as challenges they have on local communities?
Well, for the grower community that we're working with in 51 counties in California, we have a range of socioeconomic positions. California, for instance, is covered in a lot of textile brands. So because we're a fiber-centered organization, most of the landscapes we work on are producing food primarily, and fiber is a crop rotation. So one of the initiatives that we've had, we bring the corporate headquartered company and all the production teams and sustainability officers, and we bring them to the farms. And we try to match make between the farm size and what the brand is interested in to help basically companies understand that clothing is an agricultural product. We have seen four textile brands last year issuing California-centric product. They were paying for the price of the practices that we were supporting the grower to implement. So brands starting to incentivize the grower to do additional work. In California, in our croplands, some of that would include to add cover crops. So cover cropping, bringing small ruminants back into these cropland fields to cycle nutrients, to remove antibiotic-based herbicides from the system so we can enhance soil biology, removing fungicide treatments from the seeds. Our vision is soil needs that carbon, it needs that nutrification, it needs that return of it, of what it provided. It needs that back in the form of compost. We had an art show this year called Borrowed from the Soil, which was 30 designers working with textile from our region. The second initiative under the umbrella of Farm Forward that we're excited about is the value addition, decentralizing the value chain and making sure that farmers have access to not only a cotton gin or a hydraulic press to press their wool into bales after the wool is sheared from the animal, but they actually have places where they can go wash the wool, where the cotton can get spun. I'd like to see that as we get off of lithosphere-based carbon, that we think about the role of efficient use of that electricity, not just to power more suburban sprawl and more consumption, but to power more production. Half of what we're sending away, the South Carolina mills, the closest place we can wash our wool, half of what we wash disappears into dirt. So we're using a lot of lithosphere-based carbon to move materials.
So how does Fibershed engage with rural communities and farmers to promote sustainable practices? And can you share some success stories? And are there any lessons that can be applied to smallholders in developing countries?
The way in which we've been engaging at the local level with growers is through, we have something called a Carbon Farm Seed Fund. So we've been an aggregator and an administrator of those funds. We work with different partners on the ground. An example, that would be a resource conservation district. It would be a partner biologist who help us and help the grower implement practices that are not part of just the cash crop field. So this would be windbreaks that reduce soil erosion and produce above ground carbon and produce shade. Silvopasture, putting large oak trees really back in grazed systems for shade points for the animals, but also to restore above and below ground carbon. ultimately, I would just say to the smallholder farming community that you're producing the world's food, and we just need to keep supporting the markets and building out more climate resilience and adaptation within your systems.
And finally, what is FiberShed's vision for the future of regenerative and sustainable agriculture, and what impact do you hope to achieve?
Each landscape has a political, ecological, and economic history it has to contend with. And by knowing like the true history of the land, knowing what has worked and what has not worked, what relationships need to be repaired, what reparations need to occur, California will have provided, I think by the end of this year, $100 million for nature-based climate solutions for tribal communities, meaning land acquisition, for tribal communities to purchase land with the public dollar, not on their own dime. My vision for California's future is to stop exporting so much. Most of what we're doing is export crops. California's number one reality here is to take the remaining land and localize as much of the food system and fiber system, flora, natural medicine system as you can.
Thank you, Rebecca and Kira. Check out fibershed.org for more information. Next up, we put the organic in regenerative agriculture with Jeff Tack.
You're listening to Farms Food Future with me, Brian Thompson, and Rosa Gonzalez. Our next guest is Jeff Tack, CEO of Rodale Institute, which champions regenerative organic agriculture through research and community engagement. Since 1947, they've led the charge for a more sustainable, natural approach to farming.
Good morning, Jeff. We're very pleased to have you on the podcast today.
Sure, Rosa, it's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you so much for having me as your guest.
First up, could you tell us a bit about the emerging trends or technologies in regenerative organic farming?
In terms of the emerging trends and technologies in regenerative agriculture, it's quite an exciting time in human history because regenerative agriculture is exploding into the mainstream consciousness like never before in human history. We're living at a time where now 68 of the world's 100 largest food companies have a regenerative agricultural strategy. And I think this is very telling of where the future is headed. I think we're all waking up to realizing that the world's greatest solutions are bound up within the way we produce food. So when you think of every socioeconomic divide to climate instability to human health epidemics, we can look to agriculture as the solution. Our healing really does begin in the soil. And when we think about emerging trends and technologies, I think what we're finding is that we're living at a time where there's sort of an ancient modern approach emerging. So agricultural producers, farmers, food companies, and managers of land are all really looking to biological practices as the solution. So over the last 50 to 70 years, we've seen this explosion in chemical agriculture and technologies that are produced through the means of chemistry that have got us to where we are today, which is degraded soil, human health collapse, and ultimately climate. Yet, when we look to biology, we realize that all the hope is there. And so Rodale is leading science that is exposing that when we return to biological practices, we can not only restore a right relationship with the earth, but we can begin to farm harmoniously with nature. Life in the soil can return, and therefore our food gets healthier. And when our food systems get healthier, then our communities get healthier. When our communities are healthier, our economic viability increases, and ultimately, we begin to heal the earth.
And how does Rodale Institute engage with local communities and farmers to promote the principles of regenerative organic agriculture?
Rodale does espouse regenerative organic agriculture. So when we just simply say regenerative agriculture, unfortunately, there's really no true definition of that way of farming. And so many companies and brands are co-opting that word and using it as a platform to talk about advancements in their agricultural practices. But when Rodale talks about regenerative farming, we're talking about the complete eradication of synthetic pesticides, herbicides, and any chemicals used in farming. And so we are working to train the next generation of farmers here at Rodale Institute. Education is one of our three core tenets of our work. Not only do we train cohorts of farmers here at our main campus in Pennsylvania in the United States, but we are now launching global educational tools on our website and in our channels. We're also using our science that we're now able to take out onto farms all over the world through these 18 to 20 full-time employees we have at Rodale. We are now working with some of the leading food brands in the world, like General Mills and Cargill, and we're actually working within the supply chain chains of those companies.
Is it the solution to the challenges of feeding a growing global population while mitigating environmental impacts?
Rodale Institute believes that regenerative organic agriculture is our way forward. So yes, not only has our science proven over four decades that regenerative organic farming can truly feed the world, we are showing within one particular research project called the Farming Systems Trial that regenerative organic management of land can actually create equal yields, if not outperform or outyield conventional farming practices, especially in times of extreme weather events. The real solution is that when we begin to farm, our science is proving that we can sequester more carbon in the soil. So one of the leading indicators of regenerative organic farming is an increase in soil organic carbon. So essentially, our farmland moves from being a sequester of carbon through heavy amounts of tillage and through the application of synthetic herbicides and pesticides to actually becoming a carbon sink, where the soil becomes an absorbent membrane of carbon, thus reversing and mitigating environmental and climate impacts.
And what have you learned from traditional indigenous practices in regenerative organic agriculture?
The founder of the Rodale Institute drew his inspiration from indigenous communities around the world over many millennia. Practices like cover crops, crop rotations, and compost, these three sort of core principles of regenerative organic farming, we can trace their origins back to indigenous communities who had been using these kinds of farming practices over many, many thousands of years. So while Rodale and founder certainly have been credited as pioneers and leaders in the modern day organic farming movement, we would be quick to point out that much of our practice was inspired by indigenous communities who were truly the true leaders and pioneers of the regenerative organic farming movement.
You can find out more about their work at rodaleinstitute.org. Finally, we find out what EFAD is doing with EFAD's Associate Vice President, Donal Brown.
You're listening to Farms Food Future with me, Brian Thompson, and Rosa Gonzalez. Our last guest is IFAD's Associate Vice President, Donal Brown.
He shares insights with our reporter Kira about IFAD's activities in the realm of regenerative agriculture across various projects worldwide.
Thank you, Donal, for joining us today.
Thank you.
So what has IFAD been doing in its projects in the realm of regenerative agriculture?
IFAD's core business is about transforming agriculture and food systems in rural areas. Rural smallholder farmers produce over 30% of the world's food, and in some continents, 60-70% of the protein. And if we're really going to solve today's rural poverty and food insecurity problems, then the kind of agricultural practices are not just driven by the objective of producing more food or to improve farmers' incomes, but actually to do this sustainably and particularly to preserve and regenerate and restore the natural resources on which agriculture relies. So we've always taken an approach that also looks at focusing on the ecosystem and the health of the ecosystem. For us, regenerative agriculture is not something new, but something we've always done. So in August, I visited Bangladesh. I visited a village in Takugan, which included 45 households that had adopted an ecological farming practice. And seed nursery owners are supported and input sellers are provided with capital to sell products that enable farmers to practice agriculture in ways that nurture and preserve the health of the environment. So the project set up three collection centres to support the selling of vegetables. So the collection centres had two separate marketing outlets for local trade. One, which was focused on the ecological farming practice production, and the other was the normal one, which meant that it allowed the local population to be able to access safe food that was produced in a way that benefited the local environment and not just the normal production systems, which use significant amounts of insecticide, pesticide. And we've trained over 45,000 farmers on use of bioagents, on packages of sustainable production. Another example was when I was in Benin in July last year, I visited the market Market Gardening Village, which was a cooperative of mainly young farmers that was producing vegetables. And the project was producing safe, good vegetables that also restored soil health and had sustainable irrigation systems. I mean, one interesting spin-off of that was we actually doubled the number of jobs created in market gardening over a five-year period.
And finally, is regenerative agriculture the only way forward for feeding rural populations?
There are many other labels that also support what comes under regenerative agriculture. And really, that's about ways of practicing agriculture, but that includes for me fisheries and livestock production that contribute to the health and resilience of the natural resources on which agriculture depends. It is an imperative that needs to be done because we have been degrading our environmental systems. And I think that's why the focus on food systems transformation and sustainable food systems rather than just food systems is really important, because we've focused on producing food but not the sustainability of the system. And the sustainability goes from producing it right through till it lands on the plate. So I don't think there's one universal solution, but I think there are a range of different models and solutions that work for different agroecological contexts, different farming systems, different societies and different communities.
Thank you to Donal and to our reporter Kira.
And that brings us to the end of episode 58. Thanks as always to our producer here in Rome, Francesco Manetti, to our reporter, Kira Rainsby.
But most of all, thanks to you for listening to episode 58 of Farms Food Future, brought to you by the International Fund for Agricultural Development. You can find out more about any of these stories at www.efad.org/podcasts.
Join us again in just 2 weeks for episode 59 for a special edition on the aftermath of Cyclone Freddy in Malawi. And on Wednesday, 22nd of May, as we celebrate World Biodiversity Day, exploring nature from buzzing bees to towering trees.
Remember, we want to hear from you, what you think about our stories and who you want us to be talking to. So please get in touch with us at podcasts@efad.org. Send us your voice or text messages to this address and we'll be happy to play you out in the next show. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform and please rate us.
And once again, we'll be trying to be good for you, good for the planet and good for the farmers. Until then, from me, Brian Thompson.
And from me, Rosa González and the team here at EFAD.
Thanks for listening.